I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, December 15th, 2014. Would you all please stand and have a moment of silence for those who have sacrificed for our freedoms in this country? Mr. Wilder. He likes living close to the beach, his grandma and pops and his friends. He also enjoys attending New Life Church in Pismo Beach. Chase is interested in science and space. He wants to study astrophysics, work for NASA, and be an astronomer when he is older. Besides video games, he likes swimming, water polo, camping, hiking, and playing outside. He's accompanied this afternoon or this evening. Is your principal here?
No, I don't think
that she is.
Is this mom?
All right. Mom, what's your name?
Melanie
Gore. And Melanie. All right.
My husband, Brian, is here.
Well, hi, Brian. Chase, are you ready?
Yep. Okay. Ready? Salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much, Chase, and we have something for you here. This is a certificate of our appreciation. I shake your hand.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Let's take a turn and we'll take a picture. You did great. You did great. Are you ready? Yeah, you could take it. Come here, yours. Okay. And this is for you. You did awesome. Shake everyone else's hand. Okay.
Thank you so much.
That's a good
You did great, Chase.
Nice job. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you. Okay, please be seated. Donna, when you're ready, we'll have a roll call.
Here.
Here. Thank you, Donna. At this time, we will have agenda review. This is where the council reviews the order of the business that we'll be conducting this evening and see if we want to make any changes to the agenda. Do any members on the council want to modify the agenda as presented by staff this evening? Okay.
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Very good. Then we are going to proceed with the agenda as presented by staff. I believe there are extra copies on the table by the entrance. So let's move down on ceremonial calendar. We have no items of residence for the record. Yes.
Yeah. Tom Considine, and I'm a volunteer with the 50 Now project. I think Mr. Lee, probably all of you are familiar with it. And they asked me to come tonight just to remind the people that already know and to inform people that don't know that we're moving ahead with the securing the housing for 50 of the county's most chronically and vulnerable homeless people. I just checked today, I think of as of this week, we've got 13 already housed, and we're going to move ahead with that. I was asked just to bring some flyers. Part of the project is right now we're trying to get little household items and stuff for the people that we've already secured housing for that may not have it to make things a little easier. They're calling them welcome home kits. Just little items, household cleaning products, things like that, or personal hygiene. And, you know, I went down to the Dollar Tree store and got a little plastic bucket and filled it with them. You can do it pretty inexpensively. We'd like to give these to the people that are getting into the housing as a kind of a welcoming gift and stuff. So if it's, I don't know what you think is appropriate, I can leave these on the table over here or...
Why don't you hand them to the city manager?
Okay. Great. Yeah. And thank all of you for your support with this. It's turning out to be a really good deal. We're going to, next month, even more ambitious survey is going to be attempted throughout the county. We got about 300 people surveyed a couple of months ago. I did some of those surveys here in Grover Beach. There's some really heartbreaking stories, and which I kind of defy the stereotype that a lot of people have about homeless people. But anyway, we're going to do more next month, so stay tuned, and hopefully we'll have some more success to report down the road. So thank you.
May I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
Mr. Considine, I happened to be at that last HSOC meeting, and I understood, I thought, that they were going to be contacting the various city offices regarding putting maybe barrels or some sort
of... Yeah, they're listed on the flyer here, the collection points for the... I should mention that. And there are... I don't think there's one here in Grover, but there are two in AG. There's one down the road on Grand at the Department of Social Services office, and one at AG City Hall.
Okay.
And then throughout the county, some in Napomo, Atascadero. Yeah, I'm sorry, Karen. They're on that flyer.
Very good. Okay, thank you very much. Good.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Things have really kind of gotten out of control with the weather changing. There's now evidence that in my office, at least on my property, that people have been living there every single night. We find new clothing and new garbage in our side yard every single day. I called the police last week because we had two folks who were smoking weed on my steps in the middle of business hours, in the middle of broad daylight. We have some other relatively serious issues that we have to deal with, not the least of which is the fact that I'm still basically utilizing a ton of water overnight in my office, and I'm going to have to start paying that sort of tax on water because my utilization rates are higher than other folks in the city. That's a bit of a concern. Clearly, it's not us who are using those utilities. So I know you guys are working hard on the ordinance. I'm really happy to see that, but I just wanted to keep you guys posted on what's happening around our space.
Great. Thank you. Is there anyone else? Why don't you come up to the mic, because we got to get you on the record, public record. State your name.
My name is Paul Peterson.
Okay, and then, Paul, you wanted to know which ordinance he was referencing.
Yes.
So he is referencing item under public hearing on page 2 of the agenda. It's an introduction and first reading of a proposed ordinance regarding prohibiting aggressive panhandling.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone else?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief, Five Cities Fire Authority. Just wanted to come and say good evening. Thank you for your support. I'm looking forward to finding our third and final board member this evening and look forward to working with the community as we move along. Thanks, and have a great meeting.
Thank you, Chief. Okay. Seeing no one, I'm going to close public communication, bring it back to the council. And we are now going to move into public hearing. We have one item under public hearing, and I think you all heard me read the title into the record. So this is the first introduction and first reading of proposed ordinance prohibiting aggressive panhandling. And Police Chief and Assistant City Manager Copsey, staff report.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. For the past few months, we've been working on a number of issues dealing with the vagrants in Grover Beach. We've held a few public meetings, and we've gotten direction from the council. Last September, the City Council directed staff to establish an ordinance restricting aggressive panhandling. Proposed ordinance. We reviewed previous case laws and other city ordinances and have put together something for your review. Aggressive solicitation, or otherwise aggressive panhandling, directed at residents and visitors in the city of Grover Beach unquestionably threatens their safety and welfare and undermines the public's right to use and enjoy public places without being accosted by persons demanding money or goods in a forceful manner. The actions of the aggressive panhandlers create a climate of intimidation and anxiety amongst members of our community. This concern is particularly pronounced when individuals are targeted in specific areas and approached for alms while using the ATM and near the banks, while getting into a car in a parking lot, bus stops, public restrooms, and entrances to parking lots. As a general matter, the right to solicit donations, whether it's from one's own persons or from others, is constitutionally protected under the First Amendment. People have the right to do that. However, they do not have the right to do it forcefully or aggressively. courts have upheld ordinances that put limitations on certain acts of solicitation or panhandling where the regulations are narrowly tailored to address problems, so long as the ordinance does not ban all opportunities for solicitation. So we can't ban it in the city, for example. The proposed ordinance is intended to regulate solicitations consistent with the federal and state laws. The ordinance may still allow certain types of solicitation that many may still find irritating or a nuisance. However, they are still legal because of the freedom of speech. But it does prohibit solicitations that result in a person being solicited while feeling vulnerable to a crime or coerced into giving money based on intimidation, specifically encouraging. It prohibits certain types of solicitations. The proposed ordinance prohibits, there's a few items that highlight, the proposed ordinance prohibits someone from using aggressive solicitation by using techniques or acting in a way that would intimidate a reasonable person into donating money, such as touching the person, following them, repeatedly soliciting them after they've said no, blocking their way, different things like that. The proposed ordinance prohibits someone from soliciting Indians in a public parking lot after dark, unless with the consent of the owner, within 15 feet of a bus stop, and inside or within 15 feet of a public restroom. Similarly, although it's a misdemeanor under the state law, we have had a difficult time getting cooperation with the district attorney's office for prosecution under this. It requires specific intent and requires the victim to come forward, sign a, you know, want to pursue a citizen's arrest and go to court, where this we can do as an infraction, and they go to traffic court. It's a little bit easier to enforce. That does not mean we are limited and can't use the state laws. We still can use that, and we still may if the circumstances meet the elements of that crime. Thus, without our own local ordinance, we don't have the ability to unilaterally curb aggressive hand lending, and more specifically, we don't have the ability to tailor restrictions on the city's individual specific locations. So the state law will address aggressive panhandling, but it does not address specific locations that may be targeted or problems with. In addition to the ordinance, the police department will be plans to create informational brochures to help reach out to the public regarding this new law. The public outreach will be to educate the public on the city's panhandling ordinance, that panhandler is not necessarily always homeless, that giving to panhandlers may have the unintended consequences of supporting drug and alcohol abuse, and what support services are available if they want to help instead of just giving money to them. At this point, staff recommends that City Council introduce the ordinance, conduct the first reading of the ordinance by title only, and schedule the second reading and adoption for the next regular council meeting. And with that, I will be happy, along with the city attorney, to answer any questions should you have any.
Thank you, Chief. So let's just have questions at this point. Mayor Pro Tem Lee, you have any questions?
Just had a quick question, and I think it's covered in here, but I just want to make sure. There was some discussion when we were providing some input to move forward with this to make sure that if there was a third party that was being aggressively panhandled, that would fall under this as well.
It would, whether it's a third or fourth party, if a child or something like that, the officers would respond, and we would take appropriate action based on the actions of the violator. So okay. We could still actually
either brought in for either assaults or batteries or whatnot with regards to how often drugs, whether it be marijuana, whether it be spice, whether it be harder drugs, are involved, and would that potentially play a part in panhandling, and how would that be fashioned under, or how would that be addressed under here?
So probably not addressed under this ordinance. Drug and alcohol use is really a separate crime. So if somebody's under the influence of any of those, spice or alcohol or whatever, that would be a under the influence type of a charge, and be addressed from that. Okay. Whether or not we don't keep a statistic whether we contacted them from panhandling type of a call for service and it led to somebody under the influence, it would just turn into somebody under the influence. So
okay.
I wouldn't have specifics on on that in itself. And it's actually even difficult to come up with the types or calls for service for panhandling because we don't keep track of, because it's not necessarily illegal on the complaint per se, unless it leads into an actual incident.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Nichols.
Yes, I do have one question. Two of the instances cited here, within 30 feet of a bank and closed ATM or check cashing business after dark, and within a public parking lot after dark. Why are those specified strictly after dark rather than daytime as hours as well?
It really comes down to some of the case laws that have been out there, and maybe the city attorney can answer a little more specific, but it comes down to, in order for us to restrict panhandling, it has to be tied to some specific needs or to meet specific safety issues, if you might say, within the city. For example, a safety issue going in and out on a median or going out on a parking lot, traffic safety issues, safety issues for the how people feel the threat. We can tie it to money being taken out of an ATM, for example. In dark at a parking lot, we can tie it to the threat of feeling safe and the intimidation and the fear of potential crime being committed, where that's not necessarily, the fear is not necessarily there during the daytime. And those have been upheld, where if you blanket a public parking lot, that eliminates too many, and those have not been upheld.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Councilmember Bright.
I have no questions, thank you.
Councilmember Shaw.
Which city's ordinances did you look at?
There's actually quite a few. The main ones were Paso Robles, San Luis, and Lompoc. We looked at,
is basically a factual analysis, and it boils down to whether in our geographical layout, in our the way the city is constructed, how restrictive can we be stating a specific governmental purpose which would allow us to basically infringe on somebody's constitutional rights and not deprive them of a meaningful access, because people do have a meaningful access to solicit, to ask for money or ask for donations or ask for anything. And there is no black and white line. There is not a this is okay, this isn't okay. Ultimately it gets tested in court. We've constructed a ordinance which meets our specific goals, which are public safety, which is freedom for traffic, basically being able to get the traffic in and out of the driveways. We don't want people stopping in the middle of the driveway trying to respond to somebody or being concerned about them being run over as they approach the vehicles. After dark safety in public vehicles and buses, public restrooms, all those have been narrowly construed and narrowly drafted to provide the areas where we want people to feel like they don't have to worry about somebody coming up to them, either whether it's at night or if they have money in their hands. And at the same time, plenty of areas in the city where people who do want to solicit and have public contact, those opportunities have not been eliminated. So we try to strike a balance. Different cities are composed different ways. A lot of cities have many parks. A lot of cities have big malls where that access is differently approached. So we took everything under consideration and drafted what is before you tonight. You have the ability to affect it if you wish, and we can either continue the conversation at the next meeting, or if the changes are minor, we can continue with the first reading and move forward to the second meeting.
I had a couple questions just about specific provisions, if we want to do that now, or do you want to?
So hang on a sec. Did you have a follow-up question to?
Yeah, it's kind of a follow-up question to what City Attorney Kozanowicz was saying, and it kind of goes
back to you.
Goes kind of along with what the chief was saying. One of the items was, thank you, was within 15 feet of driveways leading to shopping centers or businesses. Did other ordinances or other cities potentially change that also to 15 feet?
There is no place along Grant where you can solicit, because there is a doorway every 10, 15, 20 feet. So we looked at that. We considered that. But in staff's opinion, What we're bringing to you is the most supportable under our geographical constraints.
I had a question going along with that.
So, Councilmember Shaw, once you ask that question, then ask your questions with respect to the ordinance that's before us as well.
Mm-hmm. Just going along with that, I noticed San Luis Obispo, because they have kind of a similar downtown setup as we do, prohibited soliciting within 6 feet of a business entrance, which I thought might be a good idea and might work for us. I don't know if you guys considered that.
We have not considered 6 feet. Is Chief and I discussed that 6 feet is not a meaningful distance. And that is not to say that the San Luis Obispo's ordinance is not effective or doesn't work for them. But we've looked at that, and the number that we came up with, we felt would have some meaning.
Okay, and just the provision I wanted to ask about was section 399.101E, the actual definition of solicitation. I wondered if you could just, I would be in support of removing the last sentence of that. A person shall not be deemed to be in the act of solicitation when he or she passively displays a sign or gives any other indication that he or she is seeking donations without addressing his or her solicitation to any specific person other than in response to an inquiry by that person. My reasoning, and you obviously know more and I want to know your reasoning, but my reasoning would be that I didn't see it in San Luis's ordinance or LA's or San Francisco's or Paso's or any of the ones I just looked at myself. And I wondered if you could explain your specific reasoning for that portion, because much of the soliciting we have here is people holding signs.
You, me, either way.
I can. I can start, and then Martin, you can add in, chime in. One of the difficulties we have is at times is interpreting laws, interpreting ordinances. And we wanted to make it, at least initially, my thought was that we wanted to make it sure it was clear that the ordinance, for one, would hopefully not be challenged, would not incur liability costs, and two, that was supportive, and actually for the public too, that they know that we aren't restricting panhandling in itself, and we're restricting aggressive panhandling and specific locations. And correct me if I'm wrong, Martin, but it can be taken out if that's what the council chooses.
It won't
hurt me. That's something you can discuss, but that's the reason. It's not going to change. I don't think it won't change the intent of E, 101E. We will still be able to enforce. It still is a good definition without that last sentence. It's just that's the reason why I thought it was important. Unless you have anything to add in that one.
So, City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. The only thing that I would add to what the Chief said is it also provides clarity to complainants, people who call the department and say, well, there's somebody standing out there with a sign. It gives us the ability to say, here's the section, this is what is allowed, this isn't what isn't allowed. So what they're doing is not prohibited by the ordinance. It's just one more tool for staff to use in dealing with the complaints. But again, the chief is right. If the council wishes to remove that section, it does not alter the meaning of the definition.
Okay. We'll have that discussion after later. So, okay. Any more questions?
My other question was just about the provision regarding, 3999.103B1. No person shall approach an operator or occupant of a motor vehicle for the purpose of solicitation while such vehicle is located in any publicly owned parking lot. To me, I was wondering why you limited it with publicly owned parking lot, because in the Paso ordinance and the San Luis, it was much more broad. And I understand we don't want it, we have to have certain limitations. But for example, I think the Santa Maria ordinance might limit it to parked vehicles. But as far as approaching moving vehicles, which is where the traffic danger is, Why would we not prohibit that?
So I'll take a first crack at that. As far as moving vehicles, we already have a vehicle code, in use that we use for pedestrians in the roadway, and that has not been an issue. We already have a tool we can use for that. As far as parked vehicles, anywhere in the city, the Redondo Beach ordinance that was shut down the Ninth Circuit actually, and the reason we thought it was a parking lot is because the vehicle code doesn't apply to the parking lots such as Vaughn's, those public lots, as it's defined in here. So it gave us a tool that we could use in those lots, but yet wasn't so broad that our ordinance could be challenged, hopefully.
So it's already illegal to approach cars when they're moving?
Correct.
Okay.
We have a vehicle code that prevents pedestrians in the roadway, and we can already have that tool. So on the road, those vehicles moving on the roadway has not been an issue for us, so we didn't really want to make an issue out of it in the ordinance.
Okay. City attorney? No, you don't have anything? Okay. Any other questions?
Nope, I think that's all
okay.
I have.
Okay. So I have a couple. I'm just curious to know, what has the city of Arroyo Grande or Pismo Beach, our neighbors, have they done anything along these lines with respect to aggressive panhandling or panhandling?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Because I was just, I think it would be interesting to know if they had done something, if we, depending on the direction as council goes, would that have an effect on our neighbors to the east and to the north?
Mayor, if I might, I do know Rio Grande has not, they have an ordinance regarding the sign and standing with signs in certain things, certain areas, and certain entrances, and things, but it's not specific to panhandling.
Okay,
very good. I don't have it in front of me, but it does have something they use for some of the sign. That's why you don't see some of the sidewalk sign people in a Rio Grande that we have.
Okay, great. And then I know that many years ago when we dealt with Diamond Adult World and the adult business, let me retract that. With the adult business ordinance, there was we certainly want to be careful that we are not zoning out, and I think that's where obviously the issues of legal issues come into play. But I was curious. I understand that either Santa Barbara or the city of Santa Cruz actually have ordinances that have no panhandling zones, because I know that Santa Barbara had talked about trying not to have that on State Street. Is that something that staff had looked at and so you had looked at and the reason you chose not to include it in this particular first draft?
And the reason for that, Honorable Mayor and Council members, is again, I think that as you very correctly identified, because of the nature of our layout and we're public accessible place to the city. You hold the driving steering wheel on this. If the city council is willing to absorb a greater level of potential risk, then certainly some of the wording can be changed, and that's why this is a dialogue.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Chief. Thank you, City Attorney.
Could I ask one more question?
Sure.
Sorry. So as written, would this still allow people to hold signs and even in the areas where it's prohibited, such as driveways and medians?
So the answer is no. So those are the prohibited areas.
Okay.
They can still solicit alms in non-prohibited areas in a peaceful, respectful way.
Okay. Since we don't have any more questions from council, this is a public hearing, and I'm going to open this up to the public. Is there any member of the public that would like to address Adam before the council? Please come forward, state your name and city of residence for the record.
Dan Bronstein. I live in San Luis. My office is in Grover. I don't know if that is different. I want to know how this could potentially affect issues like loitering, for example. Aggressive panhandling, I think, was defined very clearly in the ordinance, at least the way that was described. But loitering is sort of a more nebulous thing that is also perceived as threatening to the public. So I don't know if that's something that's being addressed or if it's something that's going to be addressed down the line.
Very good question. Thank you. And I'll hold these questions until the end. So let me see if there's anyone else that would like to address the council on this item.
My name is Paul Peterson, obviously.
Speaking for the other side, for the people who fly their signs, I mean, honestly, we're out there just trying to make a little bit of money, just trying to get by. I'm trying to find a job right now. I'm in between jobs. Unfortunately, I lost my job because I turned in a meth dealer, and that was the reason that I was fired. And so right now, I'm out on the streets, not able to feed myself, not able to feed my wife, not able to feed my dogs, not able to keep my car running, not able to keep gas in it, and keep it in repair without being able to do this. Other than that, I'll starve, my dogs will starve, my car will fall into disrepair, and I'll lose it, I'll lose everything. I'll lose family artifacts that I have in storage that we've had for over 200 years that are valuable to this country as historical items. I had another point to make. I'll stop for now.
Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate you being here tonight. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close this to the public, bring it back to the council. So let's have some discussion. I mean, why don't we start to my far right, Councilmember Nichols?
I think it is pretty well written from my point of view. Not too restrictive and not too undefined. So I don't really have a problem with it.
Okay, very good. And I was remiss. So city attorney and chief, there was a question that was asked about how would this affect loitering?
It does not control, affect, or intends to anything dealing with loitering.
Okay, and then a follow-up question to that really becomes, does staff see this as a first step and there's nothing that prohibits us from coming back and including that discussion? Because I know we certainly start to get into some very complex areas when we start talking loitering and panhandling and solicitation and things of that nature, but is that an option?
Well, we're certainly moving forward with the plan that was set out by the council. We've put before you, and you've adopted a aggressive animal ordinance. This is the next step, which is the aggressive panhandling. The next item that will be coming before you in the foreseeable future is an ordinance that would permit the city to control how its parks are being used, setting some restrictions. And that may touch a lot closer to what the gentleman's concerns were. As we all know, issues of loitering and prosecution of loitering in and of itself is a fairly complex and difficult thing to accomplish. We will continue to move forward with the course of action that the council directed us to take and take these issues on us, as I've outlined.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Thank you. And I agree that it was well written. I think I would be in support of adding something, whether it's the chief's 6 feet or my less wingspan of and increasing it to 10 feet from business entrances to businesses, because of the fact that we had to kind of make the decision at that point whether to keep it in there or to move forward. Had a thought that came forward with Councilmember Shaw's definition of solicitation. I think I would be in support of maintaining the language, and the reason for that is my mind went back to our Sizzling Summer concert series, and we have bands that play throughout the course, and if they're they have a jar there to offer donations for people to buy a CD, I believe that would then be prohibited. So that I can kind of see where this kind of defines what the solicitation would be, but I'm willing to hear other discussions about it.
Very good. Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. Well, I don't think I really have a whole lot more to add other than I would be really interested in looking at something that would include entrances to businesses, because that does seem to be a real issue for some. I think that Mayor Pro Tem Lee has a really good approach to that. I am, though, concerned about, of course, putting the city at risk for unnecessary litigation, so we certainly wouldn't want to do that either. But all in all, I am quite pleased with the way it's been written. I feel real comfortable with the ordinance. I too am comfortable with the language in section 399.101E. I believe that I think this is a good start. It's something that we can certainly improve upon or modify as we need to as we go along. So I'm pleased with where we are at this point in time, and I think maybe we could push it a little bit and see where we go at our second reading.
Okay. Councilmember Shaw.
I would be in favor of adding a provision regarding business entrances also. And I think it would be worth looking at what Santa Barbara and Santa Cruz are doing. If this is the latest thing happening, it might be worth something looking into for us, considering we do have a very specific. I just want to clarify, because right now it says solicitation does not include passively holding a sign. But when I asked the chief if passively holding a sign in a driveway or median is prohibited, he said yes. So I want to make sure what we're drafting is what we want. Does that make sense? Because right now, as written, if you are passively holding your sign at the Vaughn's exit, that's okay. And if that's the way the council wants to go, I'll go along with that. Mm-hmm. But then I'm not sure if much is really going to change.
And I guess the way
got that.
I'm wondering, would it be 15 feet away from the entrance? So the way this is written, someone could still be on the public sidewalk. They just couldn't be within 15 feet of, and I'm assuming it's the curb cut, so it would be the defining mark.
The way this is written, holding a sign doesn't count. So you can hold a sign anywhere.
That's right, because this only addresses aggressive panhandling, not panhandling in general. City Attorney.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Councilmember, here's what I would propose. I think, Councilmember Shaw, your point is well taken, and Chief and I have looked at that, and we're going to take another look at that. Also, in view of the fact that it appears that majority of the council is interested in having some sort of a restriction with regard to entrances to businesses, also, staff would like an opportunity to look at that again. In response to your question with regard to the cutting edge, I'm not certain that Santa Cruz or Santa Barbara is cutting edge, whether it was adopted before or after the Redondo decision in 11.
Okay.
Staff will gladly look again. The concern being is that we only have one place where the public goes, and if we limit that as a no panhandling zone, we really are opening ourselves up. Unlike Santa Barbara and Santa Cruz, who have many public areas and shopping malls, so they can take certain areas of State Street or in Santa Cruz, it's the pier and the area around the pier and try to limit specific areas. We're not geographically, at least in staff's opinion, in that position, but we can look at that again. If it's the pleasure of the council, we could continue the public hearing till the next
meeting. That sort of thing, you know, within our, you know, the core downtown or that sort of thing without the entire Grand Avenue core, that sort of thing.
So let me jump in here. I don't think we need any more. We're going to make a decision and we're going to give some direction. So I do have comments and I think you're right on the money. I agree. I think that we need to figure out if this is just dealing with aggressive panhandling or panhandling, loitering, solicitation, and looking at no panhandling zones, and I was thinking the same thing, Karen, is do we do that in the downtown? We define that probably, from 7th to 13th, then, you know, that's an area that we keep saying we want to invest in. We've got business owners, whether it's the chiropractic or it's a retail, that have come to the past council and come to this council and express some concerns I'm not saying that we want to certainly affect anyone's First Amendment rights, but I don't want us to get to a point where we're saying we don't have these options or alternatives. At least let's explore it, because I think we've been able to do that in the past in a very fair manner, in a very fair way. And then I think I agree with increasing the distances from business entrances. And so I don't know if basically looking like continuing this and giving some staff some direction for them to come back, and then we'll open this up and let the public have more comments, and then we'll adopt the first reading and then a second, because this is obviously a new council. So with that, I've already opened this up to the public, and if I open it up to you again, I have to let everyone. What I will ask you to do is if you can share that with the city manager or someone to make sure we capture it, and then when we come back, please come back and make that point. That fair enough? Okay, very good. So is there someone prepared to make a motion on this item? So we would be looking to continue this to either a date certain or a date uncertain with direction of staff.
Honorable Mayor, a motion to continue the item to end the public hearing to the next meeting, which will be the January 20th meeting. That gives certainly staff plenty of time to address some of the issues that lines as act of solicitation or not acts of solicitation. We will look at whether or not, in staff's opinion, there is potential for no panhandling zones in the city. And if so, we will propose some. And we will also look at the distances, prohibition distances from entry to businesses, whether or not that, again, physically is something that we would feel would be supportable, and we'll bring you some options to deal with that.
Very good. And so that would be to the second meeting in January, correct?
The only meeting in January. The only meeting in January.
We may put another meeting on in January. We'll cross the bridge when we get to it. So there is a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, we're going to all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Very good. And so, Paul, was that January the
20th?
Will you be? Very good.
And for the record, to the members of the public, this item is not going to be republished. It is continued. Public hearing will remain as continued and will be open again on January 20th at the 6:30 City Council meeting in the same location.
Very good. And I think that was very good discussion. I do want to compliment the council and staff on this. It's a very complicated issue. We know it's one that's pretty sensitive, and I believe that everyone conducted themselves in a very professional manner. So I'm very I want to just acknowledge that. So let's move on to our consent agenda. The consent agenda is an agenda in which the council typically takes routine items as a group. And we have, looks like, three items on consent this evening. One is the treasurer's report for the period of November 25th through December 9th, 2014. The other is minutes of a special city meeting on November 17th and the regular city meeting on November 17th. And then finally, the third is West Grand Avenue Enhancement Project Phase 3 Award of Contract. Do any members of the council want to pull any item from consent?
I do have some questions on item 4, so I don't know if we need to pull it completely or, I think it might actually be nice to have a presentation for our new council members, so that would, I guess, pull it completely.
So then we'll pull item number 4. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. So now we're going to move to our regular business, and this is discussion regarding implementation of voter-approved measure K-14 authorizing the city to issue up to $48 million in bonds for the rehabilitation and repair of local streets. City Manager Perrault.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As the council will recall, last summer we had an extensive discussion regarding the condition of our streets. the engineers who evaluated the conditions found that 71% of the city's residential streets and 58% of the city's main streets were either in failed or poor condition. Consequently, the council decided to put Measure K-14 on the ballot, which was subsequently approved by a significant vote of the people, 68.02%. And that bond issue, or that measure, will authorize the city council to issue bonds up to a total of $48 million to conduct an ongoing street rehab and rehabilitation program. Obviously, it's a very exciting time. It's a very positive project to be looking at for the city. There are a number of things that will need to be done in order to bring this project, get the program underway, and get the dollars into the city's coffers so they can be spent on the street rehab and rehabilitation program. Essentially, there are three components that need to be addressed. The first is actually the documents that need to be processed and the actual steps that need to be taken in order to complete the bond sale transaction itself. The second step in the process, or the second component, is actually the selection of the project approach or program approach to provide guidance on exactly what streets will be done and when. And finally, the third is the organization or the creation of the Citizens Oversight Committee. Just want to remind you that you know the $48 million is to be drawn down incrementally. Bring the bond issue, or the first bond issue draw, to conclusion, and the time frames that we'll need to be dealing with. So, Mr. Pache.
Thank you, Mr. Peralt. Good evening, Mayor Scholes, distinguished members of the council, staff, and the members of the community of the Grover Beach. My name is Albert Pache. I'm the municipal advisor. And we'd like to walk you through a presentation regarding the bond issuance process. Just a little background. Mr. Peralt said Measure K-14 was passed a little more than a month ago on November 14th by a supermajority of 68%, going past a two-thirds, 66.6% required number of voters to approve the authorization. The authorization, as Mr. Peralt again said $48 million for repair and resurfacing of deteriorating streets. So this will not be issued all at once. As Mr. Peralt said, this will be issued over a series of bonds, and each time that there is going to be a bond issue, you'll have to go through the same process. The reason that they're not going to be issued all at once is, of course, you cannot spend the money all at once, and it would burden the taxpayers, you know, significantly. So the first series of bonds will be in the spring of 2015. So tonight I'm going to talk about these steps: the adoption of the legal documentation, the rating process, and the importance of the rating process. How are the bonds awarded? That's often a question that people are asked. Well, how does that get determined? So we'll talk about that. The closing process. After the bonds are awarded, there's a process that goes through to close the bond issue, and then placing the debt service on the county tax rolls and the estimated tax rate that we see right now. And then I'll just go ahead and open it up to questions at that time. I've found many times in the presentation, a lot of times the answers may be on subsequent slides, so it's just best if with your permission, of course, if we could just handle the questions at the end. Okay. So the adoption of legal documents will take place on January 20th. There'll be four major documents. The resolution of issuance, that's going to provide the not to exceed amount of bonds to be sold, the maturity of the bonds, which we also call the term of the bonds, and other parameters of the bond issue, such as when the bonds will pay interest. So bonds typically pay interest semi-annually, and then they pay principal annually. the sale. So this provides the rules. It's about a 6 to 8 page document that provides the rules for the underwriters on how to bid on the bonds. So there's a specific set of rules that they have to follow, and it lays out what is required in terms of these are the terms that we're going to have, provide the interest rates on these terms, provide your overall cost, provide an estimate of your interest rate, and we'll actually calculate that. We'll discuss that. And the final thing that will be brought before the council for approval will be the continuing disclosure agreement. So this is very important. So about 20 years ago, the SEC required that all underwriters require issuers, when selling bonds, to sign a continuing disclosure agreement that would provide information on an ongoing annual basis to investors. The preliminary official statement, or the POS that we talked about a couple of points ago, that has information on the city. You'll see that it has information on the sales tax, assessed values, a lot of helpful information. But as time goes by, that information gets old. So in the prior to 1995, that information would never really be updated. So the SEC said investors need to have ongoing information, and that's what this continuing disclosure agreement will provide. There's also significant events that'll have to be required to be reported, such as any change in the ratings of the bonds. That's an immediate, has to be reported within 10 days. And then this all gets reported on the Electronic Municipal Market Access System, also known as EMMA. So you're actually currently doing that on the 2005 redevelopment bonds. I assist in the disclosure, and we're actually working on it right now for the 2013-14 year. So we're in compliance. And that's actually very important. The SEC has recently gone after issuers that have not been in compliance with that. It's a whole other topic. All I can say is it's a very important topic, and it's a very important thing to follow that I work with your staff on. So the rating process. The rating process is very important. So the way you can look at it is it's the FICO score for the city's bond issue, not just for the city, but this specific bond issue. So the 2005 redevelopment bonds are currently rated BBB+, which is investment grade. So anything down to the BBB- level is considered investment grade. Anything below BBB-, you get into the BB+ category, is not investment grade. So that's actually a very good rating for your community college. So they look at the debt ratios, and yours are very low. They look at the city management experience. They want to see solid management experience, hopefully with not a lot of turnover. I think that's going to be a positive for your city, quite frankly. And then the finances of the city, such as the general fund, the water and wastewater reserves, the budgets and operations of the city. So those are the four major factors. So I think with that, I think given that your redevelopment bonds our BBB+, we really believe that we're going to be at the A rated level. And so why is it important again? The higher the rating, the lower your interest cost. If you have a very low rating, you're going to pay higher interest rates. And the other thing at the bottom is that we're going to also look at the feasibility of purchasing bond insurance to raise the rating from A to AAA. So the analysis has to be done to compare the cost of the premium versus the overall payment cost. So you don't just look at the $5 million that you'll be paying back over a 25-year period. You also look at the interest cost. So that cost is compared on just an A-rated issue versus the cost of the premium that gets factored in to the issue and the lower interest cost. And typically, for an A-rated issuer, it makes sense. The bond insurers are really rather savvy. They have to know how to price their policies, otherwise people aren't going to buy them. Now, if you have if you come into the AA category, which would be kind of a reach, then at that point bond insurance probably doesn't make sense. So we'll make that evaluation, number one, once we receive the rating, and number two, once we get the premium from the bond insurer. So how do the bonds get awarded? So in a competitive sale, which is what we're doing, a notice of intent, which is a brief little article, will state in the trade magazine, which is called the bond buyer, that all the major underwriting firms and a lot of some investors actually get that. They look into that and they look for notice of intent or actual notice of sale. So what it'll say is, on such and such a date, the city of Grover Beach will be accepting bids for a $5 million general obligation bond. Information can be found on this website. They'll probably be taking bids, what basis the winning bid will be awarded, the structure of the bond issue, and other information. Okay. So on the bid date due, all the bids will be calculated and the bonds will be awarded to the lowest responsible bidder. So that there'll be a electronic platform. In the old days, those bids would be actually 30 seconds. In the old days, people would actually show up to an investment firm or to a municipal advisor, and they would give them the bids, and then someone like myself would go into the computer, calculate them, and come back and say, okay, this is who the winning bidder is. Take a good faith deposit right then and there. So everybody have to bring checks, and the people that lost would have to go back and deposit the checks back at their bank. Now what we have is electronic bidding, to where they go into an electronic bid platform and they submit the bids and the bids get calculated automatically. So within 5 minutes, if not right away, you're going to know who the winning bidder is, and then we'll go back and recalculate the bids. So it's a very efficient process. Then the winning underwriter will then be required to submit a good faith deposit within 24 to 48 hours so that we know that they're moving forward with this, and if something were to happen, if they were not to perform, then that money would belong, you know, to the city under certain parameters. So what's the closing process? So when you consider a loan, like when you were to sell a home and so forth, you actually put the bid in, they accept the bid, and then all the documents get drafted, and 2 or 3 weeks later, or maybe even sooner, the home loan closes. So it's actually somewhat similar. So once the bonds have been awarded, bond counsel will then move to finalize the documents. So you'll see the documents again at the January 20 meeting. There's going to be some blanks in them because we're not going to know who the winning bidder is, what the interest rate, what the total interest costs are, and so forth. That'll all be put into the documents. So then the final numbers for the bond issue will be prepared. And then in the official statement, in the preliminary official statement, there will be blanks where the interest rates go. Those will then be filled in into the official statement, which will also be finalized, and then it will be sent to investors. Then the legal documentation will be forwarded to the city for their appropriate signature. So approximately 2.5 to 3 weeks after the bid is awarded, the underwriter will then transfer funds to the city for its account, and then the depository trust company, where the bonds are held in electronic format, they will then turn those bonds over to the winning underwriter. And then the loan is consummated, and November 10th and April 10th. So people can certainly pay November 1st, but they would have up until December the 10th and April the 10th to make those payments. So the 2015-16 tax rate, the tax rates are always set by the auditor controller. And that'll be set by the auditor controller sometime in August, and then it'll go out on the tax rolls and on the tax bills probably sometime in September. So based on a 2.5% increase in assessed value, which is conservative, and I'll explain why in a minute, and based on current interest rates, it's estimated that the tax rate for the 2015-16 year, based off a $5 million issue, is going to be approximately $24.43 per $100,000 of assessed value. So why that's conservative is the tax rates from 2012-13 to 2014-15 increased by 6%. So assessed value is actually growing, which is good because you have more of the tax that it can be spread upon. So a lot of the newer residents that actually come in and purchase homes are going to be paying a higher tax, and they'll be paying what people think is their fair share. So again, and I didn't say this earlier, but certainly in the other presentations, the tax is based off of the assessed value of the property, not the market value. So oftentimes the market value is well in excess of the assessed value. So under Prop 13, as you recall, assessed value can only go up 2% a year. So the biggest changes occur in assessed value when you have a lot of land sales or big land sales, or you have new development. So if you have a higher increase in assessed value, you potentially would have, you know, a lower tax rate. So again, the factors are, we don't know what the assessed value is for 2015-16. We won't know that when the bonds are sold, but we're going to just assume a conservative 2.5% increase. And again, we don't know what the current, what the actual interest rates are, but we're making some assumptions of where interest rates are. And by the way, they've been dropping, which is very helpful. So with that, if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Okay. Councilmember Shaw, you have any questions?
None at this time.
Okay. Councilmember Bright?
Thank you. Good presentation. Thank you very much. Really?
But those are the four major areas that they're going to focus in on.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think sometime in February.
And so you think that it's very possible that we would have an A rating and possibly we could go higher with insurance?
I would say yes, because typically the way they look at redevelopment bonds are, as you may know, it's based off of a frozen tax base, and you only get a certain tax increment or taxes that are generated above that. So you're really stuck with where your base was and so forth. Typically, they rate general obligation bonds what we call a notch higher. So I think we could certainly see the A rating, or possibly at least I think the A minus rating. So, and then I think bond insurance I think is probably a given. I mean, we'll get the premium quotes from the bond insurer, and then we'll just have to do the calculations.
Thank you.
Sure.
Councilmember Lee.
Thank you. Just a couple questions. On page 4 of your slide presentation, is the adoption of the legal documentation?
Yes.
The council would basically adopt these four items each time we do an issuance?
That is correct. Okay. Very good question. Yes, every time the council will decide the amount, and we'll just go through this whole process all over again, and then they'll put it on the tax rolls, and rating process will happen again, because things change over a period of time. So, yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Which actually leads right into my second question was, let's say the first one is $5 million, and we decide how, as a community, how that's going to be moved forward and spent and put on the roads and so forth. Let's say, and maybe the first question would be, you need to spend those proceeds within 3 years. Is that correct?
Or you have to have a reasonable expectation to spend the proceeds in 3 years.
Okay.
Now, some issuers don't spend it in 3 years.
Okay.
So what happens? So if you issue only $5 million, you're considered a small issuer by the IRS for federal tax purposes. So if as a small issuer, you have some flexibility, as long as you issue only $5 million in any calendar year. So you can earn arbitrage in excess of the bond yield, which, what does that mean? The bond yield will probably be around, we'll just say 4.5%. You could actually earn interest higher than that, but more than likely, you're not going to be earning interest. So you have the ability to earn positive arbitrage if you issue less than $5 million. So if you don't spend it within 5 years, there's not going to be a...
So then conversely, let's say we issued $5 million in bonds, and we laid out a plan to spend $8 million. Can you, effectively issue another $5 million the next year and bridge between the first project?
Absolutely. You could have two bond issues outstanding at the same time.
Okay.
That's not a problem. Or you could have proceeds from two issues outstanding at the same time. It'll probably be done in the latter portion of the project fund for this first series of bonds. But, yeah, that's possible.
Okay, great. And then one last question, if I might. The payment is going to be put onto property tax rolls.
That's correct.
During the presentations, as we were going through the process, there was a question as if someone wanted to effectively prepay that on there. Is that an option?
No, it's not an
option.
It's
not, okay.
Unfortunately, because we don't know when the other issues are going to be sold or how much they will cost.
Okay.
So in the case of the special assessment bonds and Melarus bonds, sometimes there are options to prepay because you know what that's going to be. We don't know how this is going to work, because it's going to potentially be over 15 to 20 year period of time. So you don't have the option to prepay, nor would, you know, in my experience, nor would anybody want to.
Right.
Because you wouldn't know what that was, would be.
You wouldn't know what the amount was.
Right.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
And also, if I just may add, that amount could be going down. If assessed values are growing higher, those tax rates will be coming down. It'll probably be a lot less than what we projected, or that's the hope anyway.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Nichols.
I don't have any questions at this time.
Okay. So I want to kind of piggyback on what Councilmember Lee was asking with respect to the number on the increment, because I know that you were looking at it from a conservative standpoint and an issuance of $5 million. If this council decided that we wanted to do something even bigger, make a bigger splash, is there a maximum that's set other than, as you said, the definition is it's got to be a reasonable expectation of spending?
No, there's no maximum. I think the idea would be if the projects are moving along very quickly, and there's obviously some benefit to having larger projects, probably receiving bigger bids or better bids from the pavement companies that are going to be putting, I think this is a first field trial run, how quickly can we spend the money
and
get it out in the community, see improvements for our roads.
Okay, very good. And then I had heard from others that there were other communities that had similar measures passed, and they were trying to find a way to expedite the process, not necessarily the process of selling the bonds, but being ready to start delivering streets the moment those funds became available. So have you heard of a situation where someone would go and borrow against future proceeds to start doing their design and that kind of thing up front?
Well, there are two possible ways to do it. You could have a reimbursement resolution if you had city funds that say, hey, we're going to get this out there, and then we'll reimburse ourselves for those initial upfront costs, especially the engineering costs. You'd have to do a reimbursement resolution for that. And then the second method might be, it's called a bond anticipation note. So the bond anticipation note is a financing that says we're going to issue bonds and we're going to issue this note. It's going to probably be an interest-only note, and then we're going to pay it back within 3 to 4 years from a principal amount. We'll pay the full loan, full maturity or the big maturity, 3 to 4 years when we issue bonds. You don't do that unless you have assessed value constraints. So sometimes you'll see school districts doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have the big constraint under Prop 39 that they cannot go above a certain dollar threshold.
Right.
So under Prop 39, they cannot go above $60 per 100,000 of assessed value if you're a unified school district, or $30 per 100,000 of assessed value. So what happens is they're constrained from issuing bonds because of that cap. So they'll issue these bond anticipation notes with payments back, repayment in 3 to 5 years, hoping that assessed value grows so that when the new assessed value comes in, then they can issue and pay off. They can issue bonds and pay off the notes. That's not required here because we're going to have the funds in hopefully by April, I believe. So that really wouldn't be appropriate here because you're not going to have that long of a wait.
It would almost take that long to
finish a bond anticipation note that it would the actual bond. So there's no need to do that.
Yeah.
So now if the city is in fact spending any of its own funds right now, then we certainly can put in
Mr. Mayor, if I could.
Yes.
I still have a bit of a presentation to provide, and maybe that'll answer some of your questions.
Then you have the floor, Mr. Peralt.
The next major topic that we wanted to cover is actually the development of the street repair and rehabilitation program. And obviously, this is probably the most significant task that the council will undertake in all of this process. The intent would be to establish a project or a program approach that will not need to be repeated on a regular basis, but will be sufficient enough to give staff and the engineers guidance in terms of actually which which work gets done first. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate that in going through this process, we have a very up-to-date pavement management program. It has the basis of identifying general street construction characteristics as well as general cost to repair those individual streets. And we're fortunate that we have that software available to us, and we should be able to develop a series of options and approaches to, as I've said, present to the council. My suggestion, what staff intends to do, is over the next month, the very same time that the legal documents are being presented, is that we will develop a series of options that will come back to the council, and hopefully there'll be two or three different options for the council to consider. And they'll vary based on the criteria I've listed here, but certainly it's not limited to that criteria, which is location, street condition, as well as how to use the system. And one of the things that the council will want to keep in mind is they're going to want to use these proceeds in such a way that will be efficient and prudent to make sure we get the most out of the dollars authorized. My suggestion is that we'll come back to the council in January. We'll present these options. The council would select the... Finally, just briefly, I wanted to address the Citizens Oversight Committee, and then I'll be available to answer questions you might have. The ordinance that placed the measure on the ballot obviously indicated that an oversight committee would be formed. The oversight committee is to ensure that expenditures made as a result of these authorizations will fall within the parameters of the street rehab and rehabilitation program, and to ensure that they're not being used elsewhere. The actual creation of the committee is up to the council, as well as the timing of that oversight committee. It's not necessary to form it right up front because obviously there aren't any expenditures initially, but it is something that you'll want to complete during the first year of the program's operation, so that by the time that the first year's expenditures are being completed, you'll have a committee in place to be able to review that and make a report to the council. With that, pretty much completes my report. The intent of this was to be informational, outline exactly all the tasks we need to undertake to bring the program online. So with that, we're available for questions.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions? Councilmember Lee?
I just had one quick question, and actually I just want to make a really quick comment that I'm so very happy that we're actually having this conversation, so that we have the opportunity to have this conversation. The one question I have is on the Citizen Oversight Committee, really logistical question. I'm assuming it's going to follow the normal process of we've got the committee application, people will have the time to turn them in, and
that's certainly up to the council.
The council will then make the decision as to how to proceed with that committee.
I agree. Yes. Councilmember Shaw.
I had one comment on the meetings to develop the street repair and rehab program. Someone made a good suggestion to me that either instead of public meetings or in addition to, maybe we could try doing neighborhood type meetings, where possibly maybe before we finalize our options, we get some suggestions from the public, and we're able to get a
regarding these options and the amount of time it takes to complete that process and make sure the guidance is given so that we can move on this first street program as soon as possible.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. This is a business item, but I am going to open this up to the public. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address this, the item before the council tonight? Okay, seeing no one coming forward, we'll bring it back to the council. So this is basically just information and to file, but I do want to just have a couple of clarifications. So, Bob, the intention is you will come back to this council in January.
Right.
Right. There will be options presented.
Right.
Whether it's one, two, three.
Right.
Based on criteria.
Right.
So now tonight, do you want any direction on additional criteria if the council wants to, would want to add something to that? Or so I'll, and I'll just ask the question up here, but I want you to be thinking about that. So once the options have been developed and come back and vetted with the council, then we see we would be doing some public workshops.
Right.
More than likely in February is what I'm thinking.
Yes. My suggestion, at least from staff's perspective, we would like to have that process completed by March.
Yeah. So then that we would need to do those, because I originally had been thinking we would try and do something at the three elementary schools, but maybe we look at doing two or three, one at the Ramona and one at the Trueville Center. So we'll have to figure that out when it comes back to us, because I do want to make sure that we are, as you said, Bob, going out, presenting this information to the community and the folks who are going to who are in fact going to be paying the bills along with us, because we all pay property taxes in the community, but to make sure that we're letting them know what the council is contemplating, get their input and their feedback.
Right.
Okay. So that's very good. And then I think when you come back in January, we can talk about a public information, or how do we go about keeping the public informed and letting them know exactly, you know, our strategy and how many streets we're going to be doing a day or a month or, okay, I didn't get a reaction out of it, but anyway, okay. Item number six, this is to approve a resolution for exception to the 180-day wait period per government code section 752256 and 21221H. And approve agreement with James Copster for interim police chief services.
Yes, Mr.
City Manager.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, as you all know, Chief Copsey has submitted his official letter of resignation, and it'll be effective the end of this month, December 28th, I believe. And obviously, there's a need to complete a recruitment process before he's actually replaced. The situation is somewhat unique in that obviously, you know, you have an alternative. The alternative to retaining Chief Copsey would be to go out and retain an interim chief, but that would be very expensive. In this case, CalPERS provides the ability to waive an 180-day wait period that normally would have to be the time that a employee has to wait before they're eligible for rehire on a limited basis. Mr. Copsey would be eligible to be rehired for a limited one-time only basis based on a resolution adopted by the City Council. There are a couple of reasons to do this. One, we don't expect the recruitment will take longer than 6 months. Actually, he can only work as an annuitant for a single agency for no more than 960 hours, which essentially is the equivalent of the 6 month period of time. The advantage to the city is obviously he can be very useful in the recruitment process itself, and that'll be a good thing. And he's very, very knowledgeable about the day-to-day operations of the department. One of the reasons that we're able to do this exception is because it's a public safety position. If it weren't for the fact that it was a public safety position, this waiver wouldn't be available to you. Finally, it's actually cost-effective because by the time we staff is recommending that the council approve the exception to the 180-day wait period, authorize the agreement, and also authorize the resolution amending the budget accordingly. That concludes my staff report.
Very good staff report. Thank you, sir. Any questions of staff? No? To my left?
No.
Okay. This is a regular business item. I'm not going to open this up to the public. So would someone like to make a motion on this item?
Okay. I'll make a motion that we adopt. Can I make one motion for both of the or all three of these?
I would prefer, because this is a PERS item, that we take them one at a time.
Okay.
Okay.
Actually, so two resolutions. Right.
One at a time.
One at a time. Okay. So that we adopt the resolution to waive the exception to the 180-day wait period per Government Code 7522.56 and 21221H.
I'll second that.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Okay. Seeing none, roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay. And what do I do about enter into the agreement?
Actually, the first resolution also.
Okay, so that's in the first. Okay, very good. So then I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution amending the fiscal year 15 budget.
And I'll second that as well.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no discussion on the motion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you. Motion carries. What I would like to do at this point, how's everyone feeling? Do you guys want to take a break or you want to keep moving? Okay. I would also like to, let's take an item number four that we pulled from the consent. Maybe we do that before we get into the discussion about committees and assignments. I think that'll help us move things along tonight. Is everyone okay with that?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Yes. Bruce?
So.
Can you get the Public Works Director? Yeah, I don't think so.
So can we jokingly tell the chief to stay at work?
What's that?
Can we jokingly tell the chief to stay at work?
Yes.
Okay.
While I was listening and I ran out of a pen, so I went to fetch another one.
Well, we appreciate that.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. I probably missed the introduction of the item, and just in case, this is the West Grand Enhancement Project Phase 3 Award of Construction Contract. For some background, the West Grand Avenue Enhancement Project is divided into a base bid project and a bid alternate project. The base bid project is located west of Highway 1 and consists of construction of a multi-use path, installation of native dune landscaping and irrigation, crosswalks with decorative paving, decorative lighting, DG granite path, or DG path, new curb, gutter, sidewalk, and street repairs, minor reconfiguration of travel lanes, slurry sealing, and striping. The project was also broken into a bid alternate, which includes a work between 4th and 5th Streets on West Grand Avenue, and it's really a continuation of what you've seen between 2nd and 4th. Bids for the project were open on Tuesday, December 4th, and the city received four bids. The lowest responsive bidder was Sousa Construction with a base bid amount of $696,895. Their bid for the bid alternate was just over almost $801,000. And unfortunately, there's not sufficient funding available to award the bid alternate at this time. The estimated total construction cost for the base bid project is $916,895. And that includes construction costs, contingency funds, and project management costs. This estimate is $133,092 more than is currently budgeted for the project. So staff also completed a bid analysis and it determined that the low bid is in fact acceptable. You know, just some brief statistics on that. The range of bids were fairly close. No items on the low bidder's bid appeared to be overly weighted. So, generally speaking, I think it's a good bid. Staff also considered ways to reduce project costs, but really couldn't identify an opportunity without altering the project beyond its original description. Staff is recommending the council allocate additional funding in the amount of $135,000. The gas tax fund has sufficient unallocated balance to fund the budget shortfall. Construction administration and construction inspection tend to be a little bit higher than I've seen on other type projects, so I'm recommending a slightly higher number on this. The total estimated cost is $916,895, and again, the budget shortfall is $133,092, and I'm recommending just rounding that to $135,000 budget adjustment. Council has the following alternatives to consider. First would be award the construction contract for the base bid to the lowest responsive bidder, Sousa Construction, in the amount of $696,895, and allocate gas tax funding for the project in the amount of $135,000. There are resolutions provided for both the award and the allocation of funding. Another option would be to delay award of the project and provide additional direction to staff. I would alert council to the fact that the project needs to be awarded in the month of December. So we would have to have a special meeting if that council chose to delay the award of the project. And another option would be to simply reject all bids, modify the project, and re-advertise. However, I believe you would lose the grant funding as a result of that. Recommendation would be the first alternative, and that is that council adopt the resolution awarding the base bid to Sousa Construction, adopt a resolution to allocate $135,000 of additional funding for the project from the gas tax fund balance, authorize the city manager to sign and affirm change orders to the project in amounts up to $70,000, which again is roughly 10%, and to be deducted from contingency, and authorize the mayor to execute the contract on behalf of the city. I can review the fiscal impact, and that is that the funding for the project includes $531,000 in STIP transportation enhancement funds, that's state transportation improvement program transportation enhancement funds, $267,951 in regional state highway account funds, $109,000 in urban state highway account funds, $20,000 in local transportation funds. And per the fiscal year 15 budget, there's an estimated $373,300 in reserves in the gas tax fund. $135,000 is reserves are recommended to fully fund this project, which leaves an estimated remaining balance in the gas tax fund of approximately $238,000. And that does conclude my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
My staff report, thank you.
Or a little bit higher than expected.
I didn't see any specific item that came in higher, significantly higher than inspected. What I really saw was that in general, the unit costs were across the board just slightly higher than the engineer's estimate for the project.
Okay. And then realizing that we need to approve the project in December, based upon the lovely rain outside, I'm assuming we're not going to start this in December. So is there a provision in the contract, and I apologize if I missed it, to basically delay the start of construction until some weather happier date?
Not specifically. There's not a delay provision in this contract. We had done that in the past, and it really didn't prove to be fruitful. However, we have month or so in which to actually authorize start of construction. I would anticipate a month and a half, regardless, even if we proceeded more or less at full speed. And then if we incur construction delays as a result of rain, we'll just have to address that as we approach.
Okay, that'll be weather day delays or whatnot. So next question would be, I went on to the plan room and looked at the plans. And remind me where the water, sewer, and fiber conduits for the conference center are going to be. Are they coming down by the golf course, or are they, because I didn't see them going down Grand Avenue. How are the services coming into the properties down there?
That's a good question. So there's two options for the water line, and that has yet to be decided. One option would be to come down Grand Avenue, simply straight across. Another option would be to cross where LeSage is and to enlarge the existing, that's where the existing water line crosses now, and to simply enlarge the size of that water line. So that is yet to be determined, not really a factor with this project. And I might add, too, that we're not doing significant street reconstruction here. So any of those items, fiber optic, water, sewer, they could be addressed without really damaging this project as it stands.
Okay, so the travel lanes are not being significantly hampered, so we couldn't, to the point to where we wouldn't put a trench down there to get the water sewer.
I mean, this is a slurry seal and restripe, okay. Basically, with reconfiguration of the travel lanes. The only
gotcha. And then possibly next to last question would be with regards to utility coordination and so forth. $70,000 on this size project is a fairly small contingency. Pretty confident with utilities being where they're supposed to be or being able to be moved in relatively easy fashion?
On this base bit of the project, absolutely. There's just relatively few utilities.
Right.
We're not really dealing with much. It's kind of an unusual overhead utility configuration mm-hmm. that's being partially addressed with this project. At least the option of undergrounding will be presented as part of this project. And the new relocated street lighting, not the decorative street lighting, but the actual traffic street lighting, we'll have underground conduits for that, and so it'll be essentially undergrounded at the completion of this project. That application's into PG, and that coordination is part of the project to have that all final. The bid alternate is fairly complex, but we started that project with design and approaching the utilities and sent out utility letters to all of them. All of those relocations are identified on the plan, and they've all been reviewed and approved by the various utilities.
Okay, gotcha. And so on this phase of the project, the fiber optic crossing is resolved with Pacific Crossing. So is that, I kind of heard a rumbling rumor that there might be some shifting of that or not. Am I just misinformed?
There is an item that is unresolved relative to the main driveway to the lodge, which, of course, is a component of this plan. We're only constructing, of course, the curb cut and the driveway part. There is a concern with the location of that being that there's a center median proposed for that driveway that would essentially encompass a vault, which is a fiber optic vault for Pacific Crossing. That is yet to be resolved. There's a potential change order may need to be issued, and that we're working on that as we speak. So.
Okay.
Okay. That's all I had. Wow, you asked three of my four questions. Nice. I was going to ask about the coordination of utilities and then the timing of water and sewer lines. So thank you for doing that. So I will ask you the one question, Greg, is the use of these gas tax fund reserves, will that have an impact on, there's a series of streets I know that we had been talking about doing for many years, including.
I just wanted to ask if I am correct in assuming that this project will pay prevailing wage?
Yes.
So, Donna, you've captured that. So Sharon Brown, Grove Beach resident, had asked a question of the – no, we just want to make sure we got it in a public record. So her question was, will this project include prevailing wage? And the answer is yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Paul. Okay. Seeing no one else come forward, we're going to close it to the public. And is there someone on the council prepared to make a motion on this item?
Actually, I apologize. I'm going to ask one more question. And you may like it, you may not. it kind of piggybacks off of your question with regards to the gas tax funding, mm-hmm. Of the $135,000. Is there Have you pursued other funding sources, and they're just kind of closed to us at the moment? So the gas tax is the best possible source moving forward, or realizing Russia and USHA funds through SLOCOG, is there funding available through them that would be able to more funding that would be able to put on the street?
So that's your question. Actually, approached SLOCOG relative to the various SHA funds. We don't have additional SHA funds specifically allocated to us, but we have future allocations, and one option is to borrow against those. In this case, just looking at the project timing, the design process took us right up to really deadline on award of construction on this. So I think the gas tax fund was the most obvious given the limitations of timing. We could have potentially entered into a process where we had an advance on our SHA funds, which could have been used. And that could still be considered in the future.
Okay. Great. And I just want to commend staff for bringing this project forward and keeping some energy going on the Grand Avenue corridor. So is there someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll be happy to do that. Do we need the full or the individual, or can I move staff's recommendation?
City Attorney, are you okay with that?
I think moving staff's recommendation would be an appropriate motion on this one.
Then I will do that. I will move staff's recommendation.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Okay, so we are now going to move back to item number 7. This is the appointment of council members to various boards, commissions, and committees. City Manager Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, it is that time of year again where the council goes through the process of making appointments to the various boards and committees that you each individually represent the city on. The process, as you know, is there. You have the listing of committee assignments in the back. You have a description of what those committee assignments are. We also included the survey that had been conducted of council members to determine what their various committee interests were. Usually, the process is that the mayor conducts discussion regarding the various different committees, and appointments are usually made as a consensus process of the council. I just wanted to point out that there are two or three exceptions to the process. One of those being the South County Sanitation District, where in accordance with the Sanitation District bylaws, actually it's the designated presiding officer or his designated alternate that sits as a member of the South County Sanitation Board. The Oversight Board is actually represented. The city has 3 of the 7 representatives on that particular board. 2 of those are appointments of the mayor. John LaFerriere is serving as one of those members at present, and so is Cassandra Mesa Isabella, or Isabella Mesa, is an employee representative as prescribed by law on that committee. There's actually no reason to make any changes. I just bring those to your attention at this time. And then the mayor also sits as a designated member by resolution on that committee. And then there's the Joint Powers Agreement. The Joint Powers Agreement historically is considered a second member selected by the council, and then the city attorney and myself, and that committee meets as necessary. Other than that, that's pretty much completes my staff report. I suggest that you go through the necessary assignment process and then adopt the resolution at the end of the process.
Okay, very good. So now I guess we should just start. Let's just start at the top and work our way down. So at the very top, this is the advisory body screening committee, and it looks like we have one council member that's expressed interest. Miriam, are you?
Sure.
Mayor, the advisory body screening committee is per resolution adopted in 2000, and that's a random drawing. So when there's a need for it, name is drawn. And
see, I was randomly selected.
You were there.
I'm lucky.
We love your enthusiasm. Right? Okay, so how about air pollution control district in the current? Karen Bright has been our representative, and I think Jeff was an alternate. So, Karen, I know you had expressed interest in continuing. Councilmember Nichols, as well as Shaw, had expressed interest. So, any thoughts on that one?
Well, I'd like to continue. It's been a rough road this last year. Actually, at this time last year was bit of a rough road, but since I was appointed again last year, I got involved again, and so I'd like to continue.
Okay, Councilmember Nichols,
I have no problem with Karen keeping that.
Okay, and
that's fine with me.
Okay. So, and then, Jeff, you were the only one that had expressed an interest in being an alternate. Is that, are you still interested in that, or?
That works for me. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. So then we move down to the audit committee. And let's see, we've got two people interested in that.
Well,
so,
the audit committee,
in fact, any one where okay. I didn't have conflicts. So.
I got you. Okay.
I'm open.
Understand.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm happy to keep it. I'd be happy to keep it if you need. Okay.
Right. So let's let Karen, why don't you keep it? Miriam, you can be the alternate on that, and
sure.
Then you guys can work together. Sound good?
Sure.
Fine.
Chamber of Commerce. And this looks like this was a seat held by Glenn Marshall previously. And Jeff, you've identified yourself as an interest in being the rep as well as an alternate. And then we have Miriam on here.
And actually, I'm more than happy to let Miriam run with that one.
Yep.
Okay. It's actually a fairly non-time-consuming one, but I know, Miriam, you're in the community on a daily basis, and I'm up in San Luis, so I'd say enjoy.
Yeah, and that would be fine.
I'll be happy to be the alternate on that one.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. So then let's move down to the Economic Vitality Corporation. And I think all four have expressed an interest in this one. Mm-hmm. So you guys want to make your case? Barbara?
I'm not real enthusiastic about it, but I'm certainly willing to be either an alternate or the primary on it.
Okay. Jeff?
I've kind of had an interest in this one for the last couple of years. It's kind of one of those kind of driving committees that I think we can, as a city, can really benefit from. Going back to the proximity, I am up in San Luis, and they meet at 4 o'clock, so I'm available for them that perspective. Yeah. And if Joe's and I'd enjoy it, I would try and do the best job for the city from that perspective. But I know Karen's been the alternate for a while now, so I don't know if she wanted to step forward or maintain the alternate position.
Actually, I was the representative for several years, and I enjoyed it immensely. I think they play a vital role in our economic development. I think you'd be fabulous as our rep, as would anyone here, I think. So I'd be more than happy to continue.
Okay.
I'll throw my name into the hat if.
Okay.
My arm wrestling skills are...
So, Jeff, you will take the lead.
Okay.
And then...
Then I'll be the alternate.
Karen, you'll be the alternate. Okay. Five Cities Fire Authority. I just love all the enthusiasm.
I would love to have that position. I've just been going through all the stuff that's been going on with them for the last 2 years, and so I have a really good handle on what's going on there.
Okay.
Can you work with Steve?
He's so difficult.
Well,
as long as I have a whip.
So, you know, I was, being that it's a relatively new board and inexperienced members from the other member agencies, I was thinking I would step into this one and then maybe you be the alternate and then rotate in. Any thoughts from this time?
That makes sense. I just threw my hat into that because it is of interest, but I think that makes good sense, actually.
Good. Okay, so then I'll be the primary, Barbara, you be the alternate, and we'll work together on that. Sounds good. Okay. So then we are moving.
Can you work with Steve?
You mean the chief?
The chief, exactly.
The question is, can he work with the, well, he's been hired to work with the board.
That's right. Exactly.
All right. So Homeless Services Oversight Committee.
Well, that's been decided,
that's
hasn't
been
it?
Decided.
That looks at me, and that's fine. I'm very interested and
oh good, okay.
Cool.
Jeff, are you
I'm happy to be the alternate on that as well.
Okay. Housing Trust Fund?
I guess that's decided
as well.
Yeah. I think that goes along with homelessness, I think, having affordable housing, so it might make sense.
Okay. Housing Trust Fund is really, it's a great, their mission statement is incredible. It's just hard for me to get there all the time. So, but I know you'll enjoy it, and Jerry is fabulous. So
represented. From that perspective, I've had a experience in it from my day job years ago, and I think it's something that can I think it's high profile enough for the city because the county's doing such a good job of recycling, and then there's going to be the next steps with food compost and so forth. So I'm happy to continue in that if you so desire.
Okay. So Karen, I know you were down here as.
Yes, I actually was the rep a while ago. I enjoyed it, and I know that they're looking at some new techniques and processes. So I was just interested in going forward there. But if Jeff wants to continue, I'm certainly not going to throw a hissy.
Okay. So that's that. And then Visit SLO County. This was formerly the SLO Visitors Conference Bureau.
So the alternate for that?
Well, the alternate for Integrated Waste Management. Oh, Karen, you're down here. Is that?
Oh, okay. Certainly, because I was called upon so many times in the past, I think I can continue.
Yeah, I think last year I was called on equally as many times to be your alternate on the APCB. So it worked out well.
Yes, it did.
Very good. All right. So the visitors conference, or it's now Visit SLO. It looks like Miriam was the one who had put her name down here, and I think we're starting to see maybe the economic development.
Yeah, okay. And that's fine. And I know a lot about that event, the SAVOR event, their main thing. And
okay.
And actually, from that perspective, there is I was pleasantly surprised to learn there's actually a lot more to that than meets the eye. I'll kind of caveat just real quickly, if you don't mind, with the TMD or the Tourism Marketing District that they're proposing to move forward with, which I think the city manager will probably give us an update on later in the agenda. We actually may lose a seat at the, how do I say this correctly? It will, we'll have a seat on the oversight committee, but the hoteliers and the folks that are going to be funding the TMD would have the day-to-day operations of it. So we would still have a seat, but it would be not on the active board. It would be on the oversight board.
If Councilmember Nichols, if that, I know you didn't put your name down here, but I saw you were down later on Zone 3 as an alternate. Is that something maybe?
As long as Mr. Ray could be the alternate, yes.
he will be your staff resource.
Right, right. Okay.
And I'll be your alternate house.
Okay, all right.
And then we'll both utilize him and the city manager as a resource. The slow cog. If everyone's okay, I was thinking that I would come back into that role given my history with the organization. And I think, Jeff, you asked some really good questions tonight about trying to figure out how we get additional funds into the community. And who would like to be the alternate on this one? I mean, Karen and Jeff both put initials.
It doesn't matter. I just threw my name in there because I am in town. I'm in San Luis.
I've got four alternates, so if you want to take that alternate, I'm happy with that.
Perfect.
Okay, fine. I don't imagine that I'll be called upon, but certainly
I'll be. Yeah, you will be. Matter of fact, I'm going to come to the first meeting. I can introduce you.
Sure.
Sound good? Okay, South County Transit, and I know that Councilmember Nichols is over there being awfully quiet, and I had put my name in on this. I know Miriam had expressed an interest in this. So I know Miriam, looks like your calendar's starting to fill up pretty quickly.
Pretty booked, I think.
Would you like to be the primary on this
one? Yes, I would.
Okay, very good. And Jeff, your calendar is filling up too, isn't it?
Yeah, so if someone else wanted to be the
I'll be the alternate on that one. South Slow County Sanitation District. Okay. I will take that assignment. And I'll give you guys we'll make sure we report out on that thoroughly. And Barbara, you'll be the alternate.
Okay.
Okay, very good. Zone 3 Advisory Committee. So we have Karen and Miriam. So Karen, I know you've been in this role for a while.
Yep.
And water's pretty important. You have time on your schedule.
Absolutely. Well, one of the
being myself and Mayor Pro Tem, are you interested in that?
I'd be happy to participate in that. Yeah.
Okay. Was there anyone else that had an interest in that one?
I think that's the natural selection.
Okay. So I think we are good on that one. Bob, did we miss anything?
Yeah, I don't believe so. Yeah, you've got them all.
I just have one quick question. When is a better question? Would a LAFCO potential vacancy come forward to the city?
They are coming up. In fact, I saw some correspondence, I think, to the mayor looking for a selection committee date of January 7th, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they're looking at maybe January 7th or a couple of others, correct, Donna? And I think your timing is impeccable because Dwayne Picanso from Paso Robles was not elected. He had been a long-time LAFCO rep. So there will be a city selection committee in January. I don't have any more details with respect to what that application process looks like. So I will, as soon as I find out something, I will let the rest of you know. And if there's an interest, I will bring it forward. So, sound good?
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So can we do this all with one resolution? So with that, then, is there someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
Go. Okay.
Well, I'll make a motion that we accept the committee assignments as assigned. Am I to read all of them?
No, you don't need to read them all.
Oh,
no,
okay.
You're good. That was a very good.
And I second that.
There's a motion and a second. And I think we need to do a roll call on this one.
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you. The motion carries. So let's go to committee, council committee reports. Councilmember Wright, anything to report tonight?
I didn't have any council committee meetings. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Lee?
No committee reports except just I'm available.
Individuals from Oceano and others had talked about a sidewalk that connects the communities of Grover Beach and Oceano. And I believe one of the last actions taken by the previous council was to send a letter to Caltrans. Caltrans's response back was, thank you very much for the letter. Not only is the sidewalk probably buried under several feet of dirt, but there's also probably some trees and other things, and we're not interested in pursuing digging the sidewalk up. Now, that said, we did share with them the Beach City's multi-purpose trail feasibility study that we all had looked at in this council or the previous council, and I want to give everyone that was on that council proper recognition, because we were all looking globally trying to figure out how do we make our community more walkable and more obviously easier for people to bicycle. We shared that document with Rhonda Carley, and we were very fortunate that they actually took connections between Grover and Oceano. There was a discussion of a multi-purpose trail along Highway 1 from Grover, basically from Grand down into Oceano. There was also an extension of the boardwalk and then other trails that kind of meandered through the Monarch Grove and Pismo Lakes. And all of that was put into, I believe, the 2014-15 Regional Transportation Plan. So we are on the books. And hopefully if some funding comes available, we can start having that discussion about what parts of that project we want to try and prioritize and go after a little more aggressively after funding. So I think that was a really good result for us on the first meeting, or the last meeting, I guess, in 2014 with SLOCOG. There was also a South San Luis Obispo County District Board meeting, and two things came out of that meeting, and probably the biggest one was, as you all know, there was a request to do an audit of the operations and possibly the expenses, and the board did decide that, one, we're not interested in engaging in any witch hunts. However, an audit to look at how things have been operating. There obviously would be some discussion about some of the finances, so that it sort of is a look back to figure out what works well and what can be done better going forward. And so that was the context of the discussion and the decision made by the board. So that, as much as I can report out to you, I will. Obviously, we are all familiar with the law as it relates to closed session. But I think what we want to make sure we're doing is that we are completely transparent going forward on this board. So that's all I had to report on that. So let's see, any council communications? Come on, Karen.
Well,
Councilman Bright.
I would just like to take a moment to talk about the OHV meeting that I attended, and that actually we all attended other than Mayor Pro Tem Lee, who was not available. It was very informative, and there was really a lot of interesting information that came out of that meeting, I thought. Most important, I think, to our residents, because I know that there had been some discussion about the accidents and so on, and that happened there at the dunes, and the statistics actually are that the accident rate is decreasing dramatically. while the attendance is going up. So, for example, the last reporting period, which was 2013, I believe that was 2013, 1.6 million visitors and 124 accidents. Those were adults. And the last reported period, there were only 7 juvenile accidents. Now, that doesn't mean that all accidents may not have been reported, but and some of these accidents may have only been property damage. But the fact is that the accidents are decreasing. And the other thing I think is that's quite significant is the conservation measures in relation to the snowy plover and the terns. They are coming back in record numbers as opposed to in the past. So 2002, number of breeding males and snowy plover, there were 32 adults. 2004, 226.
On roads and sidewalks, and I thought it'd be great if we could get a link on our website and on our Facebook page, because if Grover Beach residents want stuff to happen here, they can respond, and I think it'd be great.
We great. Can do that.
Right. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Awesome. I think my only communication is the holiday parade on December 6th was a big success. I mean, we had a great turnout, and it was nice to have the weather forecasters get the weather right, because I think the night before it was rainy, and it ended up being a balmy, like 72 or whatever.
Yes.
So I just think the community, again, turned out in support of this. There were small children all along the parade route. Thanks to the city manager for arranging for our float, our vehicles. And part of that, I did want to thank Lynn Pearson, because yes. I know that she was one of the sponsors. Yes. So that's really great. And then to thank the Park and Rec commissioners, the Rotary members, and other community members who were so instrumental in making that a successful event. So I want to just give kudos to them, and obviously Kathy and Nora did a fantastic job. Okay? Let's see, what else we have here? So, Bob, do you have any communications? And maybe you can, I don't know if you want to give us just a real quick briefing on the lodge.
Yes, I can do that. With the lodge and conference center, we took advantage of Mr. Conlon being in town last week and met with him, went over several of the issues. Basically, to the best of my knowledge, Pacifica has currently got the lodge. Drawings are being done on the hotel facility itself. The city is continuing to pursue alternative funding. We have secured the assistance of Chuck Wolf, a consultant who will actually help us complete the application for over-the-counter grant funding to do the public infrastructure portion of the project. That grant could be worth up to $2.3 million. Plan in place that if all else fails, we'll be able to utilize that. I am working now to schedule a JA meeting. I am going to be reaching out to Mr. Lee now as well in terms of defining that date, and we'll have a JA meeting this month, hopefully, and then a JA meeting that will also be with Pacifica probably next month, trying to continue to move the project through its final stages. There's two other things I wanted to report on. Since Mayor Pro Tem Lee mentioned the Tourist Business Improvement District, that'll actually be coming to the council on January 20th as well. The formation of the T-bid, there actually Visit SLO is looking to form a T-bid that will involve all the cities and the county. And essentially what that means is hoteliers will have agreed to generally assess themselves in an additional percentage, and that is going to be used to market tourism countywide. It takes an individual vote by each city council for the jurisdiction to participate. So we'll be bringing that back on January 20th. And then the final thing I wanted to remind everyone is that next week is a holiday schedule, and we will be closed to the public during the week, although two of those days are natural holidays. The staff that will be taking the additional 3 days off will do so using vacation time. However, there'll be a skeletal staff still working here throughout the week, with the exception of the two holidays, and will continue to function administratively during that process. That's the end of my report.
Very good. Thank you. City Attorney, any reports or comments?
Thank you, Mayor. Council members, just want to welcome the new council members to the council. Look forward to working with everyone, and have a happy holiday.
Ever the statesman. Well done. Well done. So we have no...